Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Hey, it is Tuesday, July 16th, 2019, 94th episode of the show. I just realized that last weekend we went out to the Rat Bastards Infestation show out at the Triple X. I took a whole bunch of pictures of people who tried the trivia question, and they all, of course, got to pose with the bucket of barn find dust, and I haven't put them up on the page
yet. I've got some, too.
You send them to me, and I will put them all up tonight. They will be on there tonight. I'm writing down, right here, I'm writing barn dust picks.
Yes.
And, okay, send them to me, and I will put them up there. I promise they will be there. Let's see. What else? Oh, well, of course, as usual, Shane Osborne and Steve Johan and yours truly. And we got a bunch of cool stuff to talk about that has to do with the automotive world as a complete departure from our usual first segment. That is our usual first segment.
Yes.
Okay, so what do you got?
What's unusual?
What's unusual?
You're talking about unusual cars.
Talk about heading things off at the pass.
Oh, wait. Before stop. Sorry.
Oh, please.
I got to stop you. Speaking of unusual cars, I have to recommend this new Facebook group that I found. Ugly, odd, and unusual and unique cars.
Okay.
Ugly, odd,
that's
unique. It is a hoot because there's stuff
up there.
I have
trouble typing my name.
Oh, man. No, it's just if you type up Facebook groups, you just start with ugly. It'll show up.
Okay.
It's hilarious. The guy's last name is LaFrance. It is just hilarious because there's stuff on there that is really, really unusual.
Right.
And things that are pretty cool, concept cars and things, right, that you never see, an old Hispano Suiza. But also, like, the weirdest, why would you put a ground effects kit, a giant Japanese ground effects kit, on a bumper car? I don't know, but there's a picture of one. You know,
cool.
It's that kind of stuff. So
I would build then.
Well, maybe, yeah, if you were drunk.
I've seen giant choppers, giant whatever,
yeah,
this,
oh,
and
yeah,
that. And I look at them, I go, not in a million years.
Yeah.
I wouldn't waste my time. I'd rather build a steam locomotive and put I've been getting kind of sidetracked on YouTube lately watching these.
Oh, it's easy.
The garden, home garden train sets and stuff, and I'm like, oh gosh. And I have a friend that's really into this stuff, and I'm like, no, don't go down that direction.
No, because like 4 hours later you find out you're an expert on South American birds, and it's like, well, how did I get here?
No, you just want to go out and buy some
yeah,
trains,
oh,
and
yeah,
start playing, yeah, choo-choo train, man.
Yep.
Well, anyway, Subaru is heading things off the pass. They advised, they got a hold of the National Highway Safety Traffic Safety Administration and said it would recall more than 2,000 brand new Legacy and Outback models due to manufacturer's defects potentially so severe that it wants to replace rather than repair them. According to the automaker, there are faulty welds below the cowl panel that could fail over time. And
how far back does this go?
This is just brand new. These are brand new.
I was thinking Shane maybe get a new car here.
No, 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 no. 2019. And so they are heading it off the pass, which is really cool because you know what? That means they caught it probably somewhere in the assembly line.
Bad robots.
Yeah.
That's right.
Don't know how to weld.
That's the name of a film company.
Could you imagine?
Bad robots.
The calibration probably of that welder probably came in and just was a fraction of a millimeter off.
Just the panel altogether.
Guy was trying
to
do the math Friday,
exactly,
about 4:30, you know.
That's all it takes.
Done.
Yeah, yeah.
See, now, if that was a man, he could have welded it drunk on a Saturday and been just fine.
That's right. Robots can't do that.
But that costs too much money.
Robots can't weld drunk at all.
They're
really
true.
Lousy.
And that's why they hired him. That's why they hired him.
That's right.
But when that happens, which may be a reason why so many recalls and other situations is because it is done that way,
yep,
and so many go through before you even know it.
Yeah, you didn't hear about recalls in 1950.
No.
No.
Actually, no, you don't, do you?
No.
I don't think it was until the Pinto, which was all kind of trumped up, and the Chevy, which was kind of...
not completely trumped up.
Yeah.
Any car that explodes when you hit it is not something they just decided on.
I've seen a lot of cars explode in movies, and then in reality, they never explode.
Well, isn't it true? Anytime you shoot a car, it automatically just bursts into flames.
Yeah.
Isn't that... I want one of those bullets.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's...
Oh, man.
Clearly...
Well, speaking of Bullet, the brand new Corvette is going to be revealed this week. We didn't get a chance to see it before the reveal. This is Tuesday. But it's going to reach back in time for a legacy nameplate. What do you think they're going to call?
Stingray.
That's right.
Nah.
That's right. The first car to carry that name into production debuted. What year?
The Stingray 63, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
62. Yeah, 63.
But
yeah. 63 the split. Window. Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
That's right.
The holy grail of Corvette owners everywhere.
I sold one for $800.
You are a sad fellow.
Yes. Even if it wasn't yes, even the original engine, it wouldn't have mattered.
It was the original engine.
Oh! Yeah.
Manual fuel injection and all.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, but at the time.
At 16 years old and
that's right.
Needed money to party.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
I wouldn't go around admitting that, you know. Just,
no.
But I only bought it for $80, so.
$80? Did it run?
No.
No.
I pulled it out of a farmer's field.
Okay, well, that's not the worst thing.
And you got it running, and that's all that we're really
No, thought. I never got it running either.
Oh, okay.
So actually, I did pretty good. I mean.
Yeah,
you made it. Yeah. Sure, at that point.
You
sure.
made some money.
But well, to have it now.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Now, this is for hardcore fans who may know this, but according to Ottawa historian Paul Eisenstein.
Sure.
The very first Corvette Stingray was actually a concept vehicle,
okay.
More formally known as the XP-87. And can you guess what year it was? It looked just about like the Stingray. 1959.
Well, yeah, because they came at 53.
It served as an entrance into the 24-hour Le Mans,
yeah.
But never made it. To the starting grid at a mere 2,200 pounds, a Stingray concept was nearly 1,000 pounds lighter than the fiberglass body production model of the era. And I look at it, and I'm like, wow, it's got the pipes on the side and everything.
Sure.
It was a full...
Well, the Manta scoops and stuff.
It was cool.
Well,
it was cool.
For the racers, they did all birdcage frames, didn't they? I mean, it was all aluminum and everything because that's what the thing was back in the day. 54, they were big on that.
I had a little plastic model or a plastic toy that was that split window. I'll have to see if I've still got that in my toys.
It's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars now.
No, but automakers are lauding Trump administration decision Friday to suspend the 2016 Obama administration regulation, doubling penalties for automakers failing to meet fuel efficiency requirements, saving them as much as $1 billion annually. Now, here's the interesting thing. In 2015, Obama administration ordered the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to increase the fines to $5.50 for each tenth of a mile per gallon of fuel by which a vehicle exceeded the new standard to $14. Now, I'm like, each tenth of a mile. So how do they calculate this thing? Does that mean... Every time someone is driving this, every tenth of a mile, they're getting fined for it?
It's really easy. They use a formula, a secret government formula called onerous government regulation.
Right.
And that's what it is. It's just it's a money scoop. And
so
most manufacturers now are saying, look, we're making clean cars. We really don't need these standards. It's not enough coming out of these new engines.
Yes.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense that they're doing
this. And what they did is they rolled it back from the $14 to the $5.50.
Yeah. California doesn't care, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Because
they have their own
on another
thing.
Planet.
Yeah. But I'm just like, how do you calculate these per tenth miles? It's like, what in the world's going on there? I don't know. Anyway, it's the same way they calculate your IRS forms and stuff like
don't
that.
Don't get me started on
no.
that.
Well, just a few days after it was revealed that Toyota Motor Company would convert its $1.6 billion Alabama plant to SUV production, from car production, the company is reportedly planning to spend as much as $398 million to optimize its San Antonio truck plant.
Ah.
So, in other words, it will be doing a lot of work in Alabama, and it'll do a lot of work in San Antonio because
right.
they're doing really, really good.
A lot of jobs there.
It is.
That's great.
And
these
news. Trucks seem to be doing really good.
Super.
Well, so we're
well,
all
as
happy
well
for that.
They should, yeah. Hey, glad you're with us. We got more of this goofiness coming up. So we also are going to talk about your very favorite car and or truck and or why. Memories. All of that and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Okay, forest animals. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course. yours.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Welcome back to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. It's time for the Windshield View. And this week, we are taking time to share answers to a question that we asked on Facebook.
I did.
So, what is your favorite car, truck, or why?
Yeah.
You must have owned it or built it.
Right.
No pipe dream, guys.
That's right. So,
we all have those.
Well, sure.
we don't have that much time.
In a perfect world, yeah. So, I actually put this up on the Facebook page, and I said, everybody's got a favorite car. So, it has to be one you owned. You could have bought it. You could have built it. Doesn't matter. But what's your favorite? The one that sticks in your mind. They always, oh, man, but only if only. That kind of stuff.
Right.
And we actually got quite a few answers. I was pleased. And also, for everybody who did answer on the Facebook page, you guys are all going to get tagged in the show so you can make sure that you see it.
Very cool.
And I will copy all of the answers, which I wrote off. There may be more since I looked, but I haven't pulled it up on the phone, but I'll do that in a little bit. Anyway, the very first person who answered was John Howard, who is one of our regular contributors.
Oh, yes, Falcon Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said, well, oddly enough, Falcon Sprints. he says, they're Fords, they're fast, they're easy to work on, and when I started working on them, they were cheap.
Nothing's cheap anymore.
Well, a Falcon Sprint certainly isn't, because they're, of course, you know, they're hard to find and all of that, but back in the day, you know, those were a pretty economical little ride, and a pretty good performance for what they were. Mm-hmm. So, John came up with that one. We have one of the women who is part of the Electric Pinup Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Amy Jean Shackelford, and her husband Van is also a regular contributor. And Amy jumped right on there, and she has a very specific answer. Very specific. It is a Mustang, but it is a 1965 Candy Apple Red Mustang.
Mm.
She said, I love the sound and the looks of them. And in her book, it is the closest thing to a V-twin. So Amy's a Harley girl.
Ooh.
That's what we're talking about when she says V-twin.
So that was her favorite car.
65 Candy Apple Red Mustang, and I assume that she owned it. She did not post a picture, but I may ask her to put one up there.
We need to see a picture of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you ever owned that car,
oh, beautiful.
You'd have pictures.
Yeah.
You got it someplace. Let's see. Then we go. Les Mergely. Les lives in Canada, and Les has come down here for a couple of the shows. I keep missing him when I try to run into him, but he's been back and forth a couple of times, and Vancouver guy. And he also has a very specific memory. His absolute favorite was a 1970 Hemi Barracuda. It was a mid-sized car.
Yes.
He had the 528 Hemi, new engine, but it was old school, big and tough. Great appearance. Standard transmission, of course, for the cool factor. You had
right.
Modern-day wheels, but all the original chrome on the car. I get the impression that Les still has this car. I'm pretty sure it may be hiding out in his garage.
I was going to say, if it's got, it's did it actually have a stick shift in that thing?
No, I think he put it in there, but I don't know for sure. I've looked at his page
right.
a bunch of times, and there's a picture of a Cuda on there, so I'm almost sure that this is it. 70, you know, the Barracuda in 70 was awesome looking.
Yeah.
It was aggressive, had a great front end, just a supercar, and with a 528, that's not for the faint of heart.
No.
That's you know, they took that fishtail Barracuda and they transferred it over to the Challenger look, and it was
kinda,
very
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
It was a Challenger, but they put the clip, the front clip, they changed it, kind of like the Pontiac Firebird with the Camaro thing. Mm-hmm. And they changed it, and they got rid of the fishtail thing. And
yep.
it was very
yep.
interesting when they did that, because it was like, whoa, that's a departure from...
Well, styling cues, you
yeah.
know? Back in that was during the time when they would change...
It became a pony car at that point.
Yeah, they would change the styling of those cars every couple of years.
Yeah, you take the Barracuda in 67 and put it on a Valiant.
Yes,
yeah.
that's exactly
yeah.
right. That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. Although
I had one.
I'm not
my
sure why you would
aunt
do
and uncle
that,
had one.
It was cool looking.
I see. I think it'd be a lot cooler to take
hood on it
the Valiant body and put it on the Barracuda guts.
Yeah.
Now you'd have a giant sleeper.
So now I, think
I had a Barracuda that had a slat six in it. But
yeah, well, I mean,
let's see. Which Larry Keller had a, I don't know if it was a 68 or 67, probably 68, and 383 in there. And that was probably one of the best nights as a young teenager I can ever remember. He and his never mind. We'll talk
see,
about that later.
You didn't own that car.
No.
What's your favorite car?
Okay, we're
you
going into the wrong
it.
Tail time.
It's all right. So it could be yours. It had to be yours. You could have built it. You could have bought it.
No tails from the
car.
Past. Right. Okay, that's a different time.
Hands down, I know what mine is.
Okay, give it.
It's a 67 Camaro I grew up driving in.
67 Camaro.
Yep.
All right.
And a 327 in it. Four on the floor SS.
Yeah.
Columns, steering console shift,
yeah.
Black interior, oh. Pearl white with blue pearl over top of that.
Oh, very nice.
Wow.
And yes. Baby moons.
Yeah, oh yeah. And where is that car today?
It's sitting in my parents' house in their front yard.
And why is it not running?
It does run.
Oh, it does run. Well, then
yes.
All right. Then you win.
Yeah, so it's still around.
You win the cool car lottery. That's very
yeah.
cool. Well, Georgia, my lovely bride, she actually had two. But she had, I let her have two first off because I want to sleep in the house. And second, because they each have a story. So her favorite, her all-time favorite car was a blue mid-70s Mustang II. And I said, really?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason. It's because it was the car she learned to drive a stick
There
on.
You go.
And the story was that one of her neighbors, when she was growing up in Portland, taught her how to do it because her brother refused to teach her. What a jerk.
Right.
So the Mustang II was the big deal. But her all-time favorite car, once she, you know, learned how to drive.
Graduated.
Yeah. Was yet another reason why I love this woman. She had a gold AMC Javelin.
Oh, wow.
She was powerful, and just driving it made her smile. I said, you drove a Javelin. How old are you? And she's 19. I said, I already hate you. This is
yes.
what a great car. And it was used, you know, when she bought it. But
sure.
still, what a great car. What a great car.
Oh, man.
And they have one of the coolest gas caps.
Yeah, because it's
great big old
sticks on the side.
NASCAR gas cap.
Yep.
Yeah, it was cool. Anyway, so those were her two. And then let's see, we got another one from Facebook. Oh, this one, Catherine Brissett. So Catherine, she had also two, but they're connected.
Okay.
Same thing. So first one was a 1960 Volkswagen bus. Now,
ooh,
by itself... you know, not that big a deal. She was a junker, she said, but she loved it because it was her very first car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a positive thing. She said it had a really rusty floor pan. There were holes in it right next to the clutch pedal, so she could see the ground going by underneath as she was driving it. Shane's going, yeah, I've seen those cars.
That's pretty much
I have all of them, yeah.
Yeah.
But then she said her blue 65 Mustang convertible was really the favorite car because that was the car she took her driving test in.
Ooh.
So she wouldn't have to drive the VW bus with a stick to take her test.
Oh.
And I said, wait a minute. Let's just back up a second. The Volkswagen bus was your first car. And It had a rusty floor, and you could see the street going by underneath it when you drove it. But then later, you took your driving test in the 65 Mustang. What, just wait. Just hold on here. The timeline's getting a little murky here.
Sounds like a motorcycle story.
Yeah, I think so. You know, she clammed up at that point and didn't want to tell me anymore. But I said, all right. Now
somebody was driving before.
I think we got this now.
Yeah. But oh, my gosh.
So, and then, Greg, wonderfully enough, we got a text from David Dickinson. And David, of course, as you know, is the author of the Old Car Nut books, and he's very kind to let us read those stories. He says his, and we've never read this story on the air, because it's about 9 pages.
Oh, yeah.
He says his favorite car has to be the 1960 Austin Healey. He bought in 74. He bought it for $2,500. It had the soft top and the hard top, had the tonneau cover and the side curtains, had all that stuff. It wasn't exactly perfect, but it was pretty darn near. And he says, I thought I'd skinned the car when I sold it for $4,400 a year or two later. What a joke, you know. The story, by the way, is in, let's see, book 3, and it's called Road Angel. He cleverly puts in there, like,
right.
plug, my
right.
book.
Right.
But we haven't read it because it's a long story. It's a great story, but it's just too long to
read.
Yeah,
what did you say, 9 pages worth?
Yeah, it's a good-sized page.
We'll have to have a special occasion.
It's a great story.
Yeah, he'll have to come into the studio and do that one.
Yeah, make it.
So I actually have one. I know Shane's got one. Steve, I know, does. I got one that's my all-time favorite car. Now, I've had a lot of cars. But my favorite car...
You're going to have to wait.
It's coming up right after this messages. Break. Yeah. You like how I kind of worked that right
yeah,
in?
Yeah, perfect timing. Stay right here for more Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older. In the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Yes, we are back in Vehicle City with the second half of Windshield View. And just before the break, Brady left us off with a cliffhanger.
My very
his
favorite
very,
car.
Very, very favorite car, not a truck, but a car?
Well, this was a car, yeah.
Or okay.
Yeah.
And
my very favorite car was a 1963 Chevy Impala SS. It was white with the blue Naugahyde interior.
Yes.
And it was the SS, so it had bucket seats and a floor shift and all that kind of stuff. 283. It was a really unusual car for my dad to have bought.
Was that kind of a blue right there?
It was kind of...
It wasn't the turquoise blue, right?
Yeah,
it was
more of a baby blue.
Yeah,
kind of the baby blue.
It was kind of in the middle there.
Yeah.
It was metal flake Naugahyde, if you could imagine.
Yes.
It was weird looking. But anyway,
Oh.
My dad bought it new in 63, and we were shocked because he wasn't really a bucket seat kind of guy.
But, right.
You know, the SS grabbed him, and he thought that was cool. So I drove that thing from when I was, I don't know, 15, up until I was practically in college. But and I had other cars in the meantime, but that kind of ended up being my car. And I love it because it was, first off, big. It had reasonable power. It was a 283. It wasn't huge, but it had reasonable power. I could put five people in it, and that was important in high school. You know, you had to do that. But it was the very first car I ever put 100,000 miles on.
Wow.
And when
there you go.
It was at 999,000, blah, 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 blah. And we drove it out to, there used to be a Fitz Auto Parts, the junkyard out in Woodinville.
Yep.
And we, it's not too far from Seattle. And not we drove it out there, and it had about 3 miles left to go. And I drove it in a circle around in the parking lot until it hit 100,000. And then we laughed at them and said, you'll never get this car. And, of course, a few years later, we sold it. So I probably did end up there at some point or another, but not while I was driving it, by a golly. I drove that car to California and back. It was a great car. A lot of memories in that car. I wish I still had it now.
Yeah.
But.
Who else do we got? Do we got any other?
We got a few more, but we can play with it.
Okay.
Now, did you had a favorite car? Your personal favorite car? You haven't done it yet?
It's interesting because my favorite car will be when it gets restored because it's never been quite the way it's supposed to be. And that's the 68 El Camino.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
So so actually of all the cars I owned, the one I got the most mileage and the most memories out of is a 86 Accord. And it was first new car that I've ever owned and the last one so far. And I bought it in 86. And it was really interesting. I bought it through a car broker, so he took me over to Bellevue Honda, and I took one of their cars and drove over to Sun Honda and swapped mine and drove back. So it was
Sun Honda?
Moses Lake.
Oh, okay. I
so
I remember those
it was a day-long trip over to Moses Lake, and what could you better than driving two new cars back and forth?
Sure, and the one on the way home is yours.
Yep.
Yeah. What a perfect deal.
I put in... did a ton of my own cruising around when I was on own. And then when I got married, we did road trips and the kids did road trips. Like I said, over 300,000 miles. We spent probably 50,000, 60,000 just doing road trips on that thing.
Oh, sure.
So it never even burned any oil at 300,000 miles.
Yeah.
One of the best. And about 40 miles to the gallon out on the freeway. They don't make cars like that anymore.
Oh, no.
I would like to actually have that back.
They don't make any cars.
See, one of my most memorable cars was my 78 Chevy Love. That thing left me stranded with my girlfriend so many times.
I had a 78 Chevy Love.
I am so thankful for it.
I had the same truck.
Yeah.
Mine
was
yellow.
Every time I took my girlfriend somewhere.
Didn't that have the 1800 in it?
Oh, I don't remember
the
what
Mazda 1800.
I think
that
was a Mazda engine, but I don't remember what it was.
No, it was the Mazda 1800.
It was kind of gutless.
I just remember it ran very little.
For a pickup truck, it was a pickup truck because it looked like a pickup truck. But as far as hauling much, not so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had the same one. What color was yours?
Yellow.
Yellow, that's it. That same flaky.
Yep.
Orange peely yellow.
Yep. My dad came and got me so many times in that truck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well, listen,
man.
This is a fun subject, and we're going to continue it. I'll do some more on this on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
So if you do listen and you aren't already hooked into the Facebook page, please do, because we do these topics now and then, and it's kind of fun to see what kind of response we get. We will put all of this stuff up on the page so everybody can see what
that
we did.
That will be great.
And we'll do more later.
That'd be great. You know, I wanted to segue in a couple historical things tonight.
Ooh,
and the first is Salt Flats.
Salt Flats.
As everybody knows anything about cars, the Salt Flats has been a famous place for people to take their cars, motorcycles, contraptions out and see how fast they can peg them.
Sure.
And they get an actual over a 8 mile period of time. They get to be clocked between, I think it's 2 or 3 miles, and you have to stay at the steady speed.
Right.
Well, I discovered it was very interesting. In 1935, Sir Malcolm Campbell, a wealthy British daredevil obsessed with speed records, sought to surpass the 300-mile-per-hour mark. He had set a record of 276 at the Daytona Beach earlier in the year in his purpose-built powered car by Rolls-Royce RV12 airplane engine.
A Merlin.
Yes, the same thing that went into hydroplanes.
Well, they originally were in fighter planes.
In fighter planes. But he needed more space to clear the 300 mile per hour. So Campbell took his car named the Bluebird to Utah. He hit the 301 mile per hour officially, setting the speed record. And I thought, that's 1935.
Yep. Which tells you how long those Merlin engines and the Allisons that were the American, you know, side of that were used.
There's cars that still can't go that fast. So it's with even today's technology. And I'm like, what is the deal here?
Well, you build a car that's all engine and no weight and geared to the point where that's what it's going to
do. So this is what this is the next guy. So it became the battleground for bragging rights with Craig Breedlove.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking the 500 and 600 mile per hour barriers in the 60s.
Breedlove was a madman.
In the 1970s, Gary Gaberlick, in his rocket engine Blue Flame, I remember this one,
sure,
set the Bonneville last speed record at 622 miles an hour, which has since been broken elsewhere. But that 622 in 1970.
You're barely driving a car, though, at that point.
No, you're in a rocket with wheels.
pretty much.
That's it.
By loose definition, it's a car. Right it's there. Just because it's got wheels.
That is a missile.
Yeah.
We're looking at
there
a missile.
There has to be a limit, you would think. I mean, just mathematically.
Yeah.
For something allowing for ground coefficient and tire friction and all those other things. You know, what are you going to make a tire out of that'll stand up to 700 miles an hour? What are you going to make a car out of that, you know, is going to be stable at that? You know, what's the design? I mean, all of that is we've surpassed home builders, you know, decades ago.
Yep.
Now it's all math.
It's all
just math and physics. What can we do to make that work? And, you know, nobody is stopping.
And the interesting thing is they're having to go other places because the salt flats have been shrinking.
Yep.
Likely causes include commercial mining, road development, and environmental factors.
Global warming.
Well, they don't say that. So
it's not.
In the last 2014 and 2015, there was too much excessive rain. They couldn't do it at normal speed times of the year. Well, in the Southern California Timing Association is working with the Bureau of Land Management and mining firms to restore the flats.
Yep.
So maybe they're going to say, you know, you guys were out there mining and adding to the area. Now, mining is huge around that area. They've got one of the largest copper mines just right over the hill because Salt Lake City's not too far from there. It's amazing what they've got. And they've got military bases around there, too. So maybe there's some things going on that we don't know about.
Well, the flats are a natural phenomenon.
It is.
And there's not much you can do to keep it from either staying or degrading as nature
it's provide. Just going to naturally do that, right?
What are they going to do to improve that? It may very well be that they're going to find another place where those conditions exist, maybe Dubai, maybe someplace in the Far East or the Middle East. That may be where we have to go if the salt flats don't maintain,
Well, they say Bonneville, they say Daytona. So what's in Daytona that they're able to do?
Daytona Beach, Florida. It's the same sort of thing.
It's right on the beach?
Well, that's not on the beach, but there's a space there that's long enough, but it's not the same. The conditions are not the same. The sand is different. The water table is different.
That's right.
You know, I mean, you can do it, but it's not really the same. You need some place that's got about 12 miles of unimpeded space because you not only have to get up to speed, then you got the 5-mile run out. Then you got, you know, they got to slow it down at some point or another.
Yeah.
And so you want lots of room up there, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, it would be cool to be able to take a car and just do it, just to see how fast it would go.
I think you should use I-5.
Well, I don't know. Why not? No, you should just use I-5.
I still think I-90 bridge would have... I-90 bridge, before they put the rail through there, I think. Didn't they put the rail in there? Anyway,
it's a mile and a tenth. And there's a big turn on the other side. I don't know if I'd want to...
I-90 is only a mile and a tenth?
The bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was longer than that.
No, and then the tunnel on the other side, and that nifty little S-turn.
Okay,
I don't think you'd want to be hitting that
Forget it. I thought it was longer than that.
Well, I've been through it at 100 and something.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It isn't anything I'd recommend unless you're really geared up.
Okay, well, so much for that.
Good idea, but no.
So the other historical thing I wanted to talk about was in the late 60s was a tough time for American OEMs. An onslaught of small, economical, and affordable Japanese cars put a lot of pressure on the domestics, you know, like the 65, 67 Datsun B210s.
Right.
Manufacturers compete. But the latter part of the decade, boardrooms at the Big Three and AMC hummed with the compact car ideas.
Hummed.
Ford began development of the Pinto in 1967 under the overall direction of then-President Lee Iacocca, who just passed away.
He did.
Lee wanted a lightweight entry into the market under 2,000 pounds that cost less than $2,000. Engineers at Ford jumped to the task, creating a new platform that also served double duty under everyone's favorite Mustang, the Mustang II. From start to finish, Pinto's development took 25 months.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 25 minutes.
No, well, that's what it looks like. An impressive timeline in an era when new car development typically took 43. Ford introduced the Pinto in September of 1970 for the 71 model year. The new competitors to the Pinto included Chevrolet Vega, the AMC Gremlin from America, the Mazda 1800, and the Datsun B210 from Japan. Mm-hmm. As was typical of the economy cars in the 70s, multiple body styles greeted Pinto customers. There was the two-door sedan, the sedan delivery, and the station. Now, the sedan delivery and the station wagon, what was the difference between those two?
Windows.
Windows.
Two doors, four doors.
Side windows.
Windows in the delivery. The station wagon styles, as well as three-door hatchback, engine ranged from 1.6 to 2.8 liters, and the range top with the Cologne V6. The Pinto was very successful for Ford, but things took a turn in the middle of the decade.
Until somebody rear-ended
some
one.
Pintos caught fire here and there, which led to the traffic safety guys, to investigation in 1974, eventual publication in 77
Ralph Nader.
So some 117 lawsuits impacted Ford by the time everyone said it was done.
Yep.
So I thought it was kind of interesting that they started this thing in 67, and it ended up coming out in 70.
Yep.
And so looking at the Pinto in 67 format completely didn't look like anything going on in the 60s, but it did start looking like the 70s when it came out, the front end and everything. But it just, you're thinking, think about what the 67 Falcon looked at that time, you know, or
well, it was
Fairline.
Also the first American effort at an economical
compact.
An economical, compact, you know, efficient car. They wanted to build one cheap, and they did.
Yeah.
They made a catastrophic error in terms of
the
layout.
Hatchback was pretty cool.
The hatchback was okay.
Made a phenomenal
The styling was basic, but
they were low to the ground and wide, were they not?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, phenomenal race cars.
Pacers probably did pretty good too, right?
Pacers and the Gremlin actually do really well on the oval track.
Because you had those wide wheel stance and not very tall.
Well, plus the Pacers.
Well, the B210s made killer.
The last five-year championship winner out at Evergreen Speedway has been a Gremlin.
Yeah. Yep.
No one can touch that car out there. It's so quick.
Wow. Because the B210s were huge, the little boxy ones in the 60s. Very popular. And the boxy little Fiats as well.
Yep, the Datsun 510s.
That's it, 510s.
Yes. I had one of those in a race car for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, they're fun old cars. I was racing SCCA.
Nice.
Yeah, I know a guy that has probably six or seven, we know him, Mr. Bode.
Oh, yes.
He's got many different Datsuns
of sorts.
He would be an interesting guy to talk to.
Well, Datsuns and Nissans, for that matter, were world. What am I trying to say? World popular. You know,
yes, they
were. They sold
very
them all over
were.
The world, and they had the advantage of being pretty simple, pretty straightforward to work on. You could literally find parts for them just about every place because the Japanese were all about, you know, manufacturing and making sure that they had plenty of backup dealerships and stuff, and they were easy to fix. You know?
Very, very easy to work on. My dad's
before EFI.
Yep.
Yeah. My Mazda 1871 was it had the little drip, you know, you had to put the
dash pot carburetors.
Yeah. And we rebuilt the engine and everything, and I worked on it all the time. It wasn't
thirty weight oil.
Yeah. Yep. But that was the difference was that one had a really nice padding, beautiful interior, whereas the Datsuns were a little more cheaper. They just didn't have the...
Spartan.
Yes, they were Spartan. There's the term, Spartan. And,
I don't know. I never owned one with interior.
Yeah,
yours was pretty nice and noisy, right?
Yep.
The Datsuns...
That's a bread box.
They had the advantage of...
Roll cage and sheet metal. I mean, what is
bread box on wheels.
Their dash pot carburetors actually worked.
Yes.
The SUs that they used to use in the Jaguars and the other British cars,
they
were temperamental at best.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, stick around. We got more of Horsepower Chrome and Rust, the greatest automotive information show in the known world, according to Brady and us. We got a cool hot rod story coming up, and stick around.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome back to Horsepower Chrome and Rust. It is my favorite part of the show. It's story time.
So can I get a nap? Or I'm going to get my blankie.
Oh, yes. You're the worst.
So you know, what kind of story you got for us this week?
Actually, we were talking about Bonneville just a little bit ago, and this, coincidentally, is a Bonneville story.
Oh, cool.
This one is actually, it's a story by Ron Schenck, but it has to do with Bob Beiler. Bob's not with us anymore, but the Bonneville Salt Flats had a place of reverence for Bob. It's always kind of been that way for anybody who's deeply interested in anything with wheels that go fast. And Bob and I would talk for hours about Bonneville and about the famous people and the machines that we'd seen in Hot Rod Magazine and Rod and Custom magazines as kids growing up. See, Bonneville is more than just a place. It's a place of worship. Our personal adventures at Bonneville began on Bob's 60th birthday get-together, talking about how fast the years pass and things that we've always wanted to do and not taken the time to do. Bob says, "You know, we really need to go to Bonneville." And I immediately agreed. So with a few moments of thought, and because he was a car guy, he said, "I'll take a car." Me, being a motorcycle guy, said, "I'll take a bike." So the die was cast. I bought a new Buell XB9 in 2003, and with the help of Lattice Motors, Harley Davidson, in Portland, we prepped it for the Salt Flats. Now, Bob was unable to go with me, so I went without my buddy, and this was for Speed Week in August. So I learned a lot. I had a lot of fun. I didn't break any records, but I still had fun. In the meantime, Bob is working on gathering up parts for a car for Bonneville and trying to take care of business as well. So in October, World Finals are held at Bonneville, and Bob was able to go. Yep. So as we're driving to the event, Bob was very animated. He's excited to be going. Before entering the town of Wendover, which is where everybody stays during the events on the Salt Flats, the highway passes through rolling desert country, and there's a side road that I had found quite by accident while lost on my first time there. Suddenly, on the top of the hill, the Bonneville Salt Flats is there endlessly before you, and I wanted Bob to see this, as I had, for his first time there, so I didn't say anything. I just drove to it. He was awestruck, to say the least, and he didn't speak for a few minutes, just kind of taking it all in. This was an extremely special moment for both of us, and it's a memory I'll carry with me forever. So, once we got settled on the salt, Bob experienced going through technical inspection and all the things needed to do, any kind of participation in the actual event. We had a great time, no records, but a great time. So I decided to build another bike for the Salt Flats, and I discussed it with Bob. He said, good idea, he'd help. We decided to build a 500cc purpose-built bike and go after the APG record, which at the time was about 114 miles an hour. So all the next year, we worked on the new bike. We started out with a single-cylinder Buell Blast motor. Basically, it's half a Harley motor. And I gathered parts, and Bob did 99% of the fabrication. He was building this bike for me, but he still wanted to run a car. Now, Bob did a wonderful job, as always, building the bike. I'd taken that 500cc bike to the Harley shop for some dyno work. We planned to pick it up on our way to Speed Week, so we loaded up the 1,000cc Buell bike I had been running, headed for Portland to get the 500cc bike on our way. Well, there was a glitch, and the bike wasn't ready. It was too late to change plans, so we took the new bike with us to Bonneville, even though it really kind of wasn't ready to run. We put the new 500cc bike in the back of the pickup so people could admire it. We left the 1,000cc bike in the trailer, unloading for each pass. Well, you should have seen all the people looking at Bob's creation. The interest was unbelievable. There were literally hundreds of questions and pictures, and the design was all Bob's. Nothing like it ever seen there before or since. There's a picture of it here in the book, and I should publish it because it's pretty interesting. The design was all Bob's. Now, that following year, the Bonneville blogs were full of questions about the bike. Who owned it? Who built it? Was it becoming kind of a celebrity and taking on a life of its own? So now we're into the third year, and we're prepping for both the 1,000 and the 500cc bikes for the Bonneville event that year. Bob still wants to build a car, but short time for such a massive undertaking with work and all. Anyway, the time is closing in on us for Speed Week. The motel is reserved and paid for, both bikes are entered, and we are ready to go. And about 2 weeks before we're ready to leave, my mom has a heart attack and is very ill, so of course I can't go. I wanted to, but it wouldn't be right. So I talked to Bob and Clint into taking the 500cc bike that Bob had built and going to Speed Week. It took some convincing, but he finally agreed. So Bonneville's heat and altitude has an extreme effect on how motors run. One loses about 25% horsepower due to these conditions, and the salt is really slick. It's difficult to make things run and perform like they do at sea level. Well, the bike performed perfectly on the salt due to Bob's wonderful chassis build. They had a great time again, no records, but they had a lot of fun. So when they returned, Bob was stoked, ready to have a bike of his own to run on the salt. So what else could a friend do? I said, Bob, the bike is yours. You have it. And he's, no, I can't do that. I said, yes, you can. It's yours. Well, after some time, he agreed. And why not? He built it. So knowing Bob, of course, he wouldn't just take it. So he says, I'll build you another one. So he did just that with my help. And there were times when we would start at 5 o'clock in the morning and work until dark on the new bike for me. He wanted to get it completed for the following year. He had to do his own work as well, of course.
Man, they caught the fever bad.
Man. So one time we laid down on the concrete floor and took a nap. We're so tired of working on the new bike. It takes a lot of time and effort to build a bike from scratch. There were times when I hated the thing, would get all upset about it, but Bob would continue with the build. He felt he owed me, and this is how he got started at Bonneville. We went on to break the record in his class twice, made many friends, gained many admirers of his craftsmanship. He wound up being hit by the Bonneville bug really hard, and he also became known as Bonneville Bob. There's tons of pictures of him on the internet, and one of my favorite is where a photographer at Bonneville took a picture of three photographers taking a picture of Bob on his bike. We had a saying that we were going to paint on our trailers, caution, this trailer contains an incurable disease, motorcycles. Now, Bob Beiler passed suddenly on the morning of April 13th, 2012. God, I miss him.
That is so wonderful.
Isn't that amazing? And, you know, it's not so much that it was just Bob or Larry or the rest of these guys. Anybody who gets involved in that sort of thing, they kind of catch the fever.
Yeah.
It's an easy thing to do. And anybody who's a gearhead, I don't care how little or how much,
well,
it kind of gets in your blood.
Brady, you've got that because you're out there working in the shop now at your friend's house on your rat rod.
And oh, it's
got
a roller
different,
now.
You got a different people helping you out.
Oh, yeah.
And
God love all of those guys, I think, every single one of them.
We have a bombshell we're building.
You are, yes, yeah.
It's a slow project to the shop, but it's there.
Yeah. Well, and Elton built that chopper out of parts on the wall.
We got the fuel cell now. We got some of the suspension.
That's great. So you got to put some pictures of that up on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
You got to do that.
It's not much but a pile of parts right now. But
that's okay. Pile of parts starts into, you know, eventually becomes something. I had a pile of parts in my garage for 5 years. And now it's a truck.
Yeah.
I got a truck that's turning to rust, I've got to get going on it.
You got a pile of El Camino.
Yeah, I do.
And you by golly.
And my wife is the one who keeps saying, when are you going to get on that? And I'll go, do you want the cabinets done? Do you want the rest of the house done? Or do you want that? And
we
so
need to, we need
she
to
told
over.
me, she gave me an ultimatum. She says, by March 21st. I don't know why this date. March 21st next year. You're starting that thing no matter what. I go, okay.
All right.
So you, we got the money.
We
got
to come over and kick you in the butt and get you started on the process.
Yep.
We'll, if nothing else, we'll pull all the parts out.
Take it apart.
Yeah.
Shane needs to come over, and we need to figure out if we can actually turn the thing over and not get it to knock, and if we can fire it up. Because if we can fire it up and actually runs, I'll put the tranny fluid back in, and I'll squeak it to a couple whatevers and go get it licensed and drive it around even. I mean, it's still drivable if we can make sure the engine isn't doing anything bad.
We just need to take it apart from him.
I think you're right.
No.
Yeah. You're right.
Give him come over with a big box of Ziploc baggies. And box of Sharpies. And
yeah, and don't mark anything.
Well, and I was looking, I was like, I want to do a
this could be a fuel line or an oil line. Well,
yeah.
Let's see.
But nonetheless, I'm just saying.
We will help you.
Yeah,
we will.
And my sons are going to help too. So
nice. Well, thanks to David Dickinson again for these books and these stories. You know that you can get the Old Car Nut book on Amazon or directly from oldcarnutbook.com. I am pounding David weekly to get the fourth book ready to go.
I hope that he does.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so Shane, what have you guys been working on over there at the shop lately?
Ooh.
Since it's been a couple weeks since we've had you here.
Well, see, we actually have a lot of stuff that's just getting ready to walk out the door. So
nice.
Oh, good.
I got a 72 lifted K20 pickup truck that is beautifully green and white.
It's nice.
And then we have a 62 C10, absolutely gorgeous car, powder coated frame, I mean, show truck all the way through.
I've seen that. That was the one that you guys were working on. Yeah.
The K20 has the green shocks, right?
Yes. The green shocks.
Very exciting.
There's a 40 Ford in there. We just did all the interior on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Doing some touch ups on the Buick so it can go to its home.
You need to move those things out so you can get more stuff in there.
I know. And then we have that 57, which is actually became known as a 957 because 95 Impala with a 57 Chevy body on it.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, stay right here. After these messages, we'll be back with this week's trivia.
It's a good one.
All right.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man.
Well, welcome back. It's Around the Wheel. And this is, of course, where we talk about the upcoming events, weekly trivia question being one of them. We did have a marvelous time at the Rat Bastards Infestation a couple of weeks ago, and there's fallout from that. I shouldn't say fallout. Feedback is a much better word.
Oh, okay.
several of the people who came from parts all over the western, the Northwest, just two states away, are already planning to come back for next year's event. So
wow.
Super for those guys. If you want to see some of the pictures, if you go to if you get a Facebook and you do a search for Infestation, you will find all kinds of pictures of the event. It was a lot of fun. So last week we had a great trivia question, and this one was one that somebody on Facebook said, you asked this one before, but I didn't. The question was, who designed what was considered the world's first car? Now, what we asked before was, what was the world's first car? We didn't ask who designed it.
Oh, right.
So I have that one to say. Anyway, we looked and looked and looked to see, and nobody came up with this.
Right.
Except the guy who said, you asked it before. And I said, no, well, that's not the same thing. So nobody gets the coveted bucket of barn find dust, because the answer for who designed what was considered the world's first car was Carl Benz.
Mm-hmm.
1886.
1886.
Benz patent Motorwagen is universally recognized as the first internal combustion automobile. In 1926, many years later, Carl Benz and Gottlieb Daimler would join forces in the company creating Daimler-Benz, of course, later Mercedes-Benz. But it was way before that that Carl decided, he literally was in a buggy shop, and he said, you know, if I put a motor on, and that, you know, it's just
there
stuff
you go.
Exactly like that. So Carl Benz was the guy. And this week's question, it's another one about firsts, but this one is a kind of a fun first. Which car, of all the cars that held the title muscle car,
mm-hmm.
which one is considered to be the very first muscle car? The very first.
Ooh.
And there's a lot of potential. I mean, you could go,
yes.
you know, the 63 Buick Riviera now, certainly was one of them.
When did the term muscle car actually get applied to these cars?
That's part of this answer.
Kind of like, when did heavy metal start getting used in the world of rock and roll?
Well, you see.
Yeah.
So this it's
so
actually
now,
part of the answer.
Yeah.
And
it was,
it's not a 60s car.
Well, interestingly enough, no, I'm not going to tell you.
No,
you got to go. You got to do your own research. You got to do your own research.
Because I know of a 50s car that would be,
but,
without a doubt.
Yeah, but it wasn't necessarily considered a muscle car.
That was a sports car.
Oh, yeah,
this was,
it was
the term muscle car has to do with this thing. So that's the deal. Anyway, if you think you know,
yep.
you can get with us on the Facebook page. Of course, the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Facebook page. You can send us an email at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can send us a carrier pigeon. You can flag us down on the street.
That's
whatever,
right.
Whatever works is just fine. But yeah, if you know, you too could be the coveted winner of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust can, which, by the way, we took to the infestation, and we got several people who had pictures taken with the can because they answered trivia questions correctly, and all those pictures are going up on the Facebook page tonight as soon as I
and,
get back.
And I
to
just
the want
to do a big throw out because this is for events. We've
you
got
do a
the
big throw up?
No, a big throw out.
Oh, throw
a big
out,
shout out for the Roundup.
What is it, Baron?
The Mustang Roundup, which is the world's largest Mustang gathering.
Oh, yes.
July 18th through the 21st at Bellevue Community College.
Ah, yes.
That's
yes.
coming up. And then we've got that one I think is already done. We're going to have Steels and Wheels coming up in August 17th. We've got the Seafair August 3rd. And then
and there's several shows coming up on the 20th.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, Montesano's got a car show on Saturday, the 7th annual car show for kids at Emerald Downs.
Yep.
The Renton Loopers Car Club is putting on a huge Cruise the Loop show on Saturday.
Yep.
They all going to cruise the Renton Loop, which is a big deal here in the Northwest. Yep. Bumpies.
Bumpy's
Classic Car Show is in Puyallup.
That's a great
one.
And
all of that is on Saturday.
Yep.
So if you don't make one, make the other one, because there's plenty to go with.
Make any of them. Hey, that's our cue to hit the gas until next week. Thanks for the great stories this week, too. Thanks for liking and following our website and our Facebook page. Check the archives at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I am Brady Wright, saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we light the tires on another Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
See you later.
See you later.